I'm calling the meeting to order. I am State Representative Gwendolyn Clark Reed, and I'm serving as the Chair of the Broward Legislative Delegation. Welcome to the delegation's first public hearing of the 2015-2016 term on issues pertaining to education and cultural affair. If we would all rise and ask Representative Jenny to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will now have the roll call by Faith at this time.
Senator Raymond, Senator Vogel, Senator Spatz, Senator Brennan, Representative Bryan, Representative Gore.
Here.
Representative Rogers.
Here.
Representative Jacobs, Representative Moskowitz, Representative Edwards, Representative Denny.
Here.
Representative Geller, Representative Jones, Representative Pritchett, Representative
Diaz, Representative Scarf, Representative Medina, Representative Quadri. Here. Thank you. At this time, we will be welcomed to the City of Wilton Manors by Commissioner Tom Green. And thank you very much to the City of Wilton Manors for allowing us to use this facility for our first public hearing.
Well, thank you very much for being here, and I want to welcome you to the room with the worst acoustics in Broward County. So I urge everyone to speak up as I'm trying to remind myself. I want to thank everyone here that has served the people of Wilton Manors. And whoever will serve Wilton Manors in the future, depending on what lines are drawn for representation. I also was told that we could not use this as a moment of lobbying you, but I do want to remind you that we will be sending a lobbyist from the Florida League of Cities, and several of the commissioners here have served on some of these committees. So, please welcome them and listen to them as much as you can. Again, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Green. We are now in the public hearing portion of our meeting. All speakers will be allotted 3 minutes each for their presentation. As of now, we have 10 speakers. We would appreciate your cooperation in turning your cell phones off or setting them on vibrate so that we will not be interrupted by phones ringing. Thank you. If there is anyone else in the audience who is interested in speaking to the legislative delegation and who has not previously registered or signed up, please fill out a speaker's form and submit it to Faith Lombardo. After each person speaks, the members of the delegation will be provided time to ask questions. And we'll start off with Gregory Hales, General Counsel, Vice President for Public Policy and Government Affairs, Broward College. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you so much, delegation members. If I should approach just to hand out a couple of documents for you to take a look at, and I will work through them. I will keep it short in under 3 minutes. And, you know, although sometimes I know this is not an easy issue to have to address, and I'm sure you'll hear a bit today, what we're really concerned about is funding, and really what I would like to share with you is not my own numbers or the college's own numbers, but numbers that have been reproduced by the Department of Education for Florida that really delineate the concerns that we have, and some of which I talked to you about before, but I want to give you a high-level understanding in the next 2.5 minutes of our concerns. The first page that you'll look at is the formula model of funding. What it simply dictates is the 28 different colleges that are within the state of Florida. And the very simple thing that I want you to point to is notwithstanding the fact that Broward College has done incredibly well in terms of growth, in terms of producing graduates, in terms of identifying fields of employment and making sure that we have graduates who are suitable for those fields of employment. Broward College is fourth
in formula funding. That is fourth from the very bottom of formula funding. And so this will be something that we talk and try to create great compression. As you can see, there are some schools who are at the very top, one at 89% of what would be 100%. We are at 72.33% of funding. And so we know that we need to work towards closing that gap and being represented at a higher level. I'm going to direct you to the next page as well, and obviously we have to take questions and talk more later. I know we're going to try to. The next one deals with, again, a Florida Department of Education report that indicates the instructional space needs analysis for all the colleges in the state of Florida. You will see Broward College at the very top of that list, but what that means is we are dead last in terms of instructional space needs. We have, according to the Florida Department of Education, 44% of our instructional space needs met. You can see that in the facilities that have been untouched for 60 years. You can see it in facilities in our downtown site that have actually received a facility study saying that we should no longer be in that facility. You will also see in that list that there are some schools that have instructional space needs that satisfy 238% of their needs. Broward College is dead last. My final point to you is performance funding. The last page, third and fourth pages, there are four categories of performance funding: job placement, completion rates, retention rates, and entry level wages. For some very common reasons, entry level wages and job placement, two categories that the state of Florida has taken tremendous pride in, have lower values than the others, and those are the same two areas that Broward College does the very best at in the state of Florida. So we like to see equal weight given to all four categories, including entry level wages and job placement, something we believe to be critically important in this community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Are there any questions for Mr. Hale? Yes, Representative DeBose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your presentation, I didn't quite catch what you said about the downtown campus.
Sure. So we have a facility on our downtown site, which is right on Southeast 3rd and Osceola. It is a former bank that's been around since the early 70s. And it's right, if you look at it, it still looks like a bank. And we had a federal, statewide study done called the Solomon Study to see whether or not it actually was something we should be reinvesting in, whether it should be torn down. It's an example of one of the facilities that we now have no one in because it is essentially useless and should be torn down as identified by the state. And that is just one. We have our largest campus in Navy that has a number of facilities. While they are there, they should not be used and cannot be used. And so we are at a point in where we're looking at a significant need in space funding as well as space itself just to have our classrooms. So I want to be clear, this is instructional space need. This is not soccer fields, it's not weight rooms, this is about teaching our students and having the facilities that we need to do so. And according to that data from that DOE, we are far from where we need to be in the worst of state of Florida by far.
Follow up?
I do have another question.
Yes, go ahead.
Also, if you could expand more on the weight category when you're talking about entry-level wages and retention.
So what we would like to see, the DOE was allocated by the legislature the actual weighting of the categories. Last year, the legislature said we would like these four categories in play. It essentially gave the DOE the chance to do what it wanted with it, although I think there are a number of members who would indicate that they did not expect there to be any inequity in the weighting. Okay, so the equity of the weighting was obviously toyed with, and we are having a hard time, frankly, understanding again the emphasis that the state and we all place on job placement and wages. Why this should be the value, particularly entry level wages. Everything is on a 10. At least two of the categories that are outside of those are weighted on a 10-point scale, and then you have entry level wages weighted on a 3-point scale, and then job placement at a 7.5 scale. We ended up in number 9 in performance funding. If those weights had been equal, and frankly, we made sure we put a lot of our resources into job placement and high wages, we would have been ranked 4th in the state at the full time.
Follow up, Chair.
Representative Rogers.
Okay, thanks for your presentation and for the education, I must say, because we cannot ask for educators or professors to give you the best and brightest here in our county, and they're not being compensated at a salary that is comparable to others. So what should this delegation be doing? Tell me specifically what you would like for us to do.
You know, ideally, what I would like to see in this delegation, this session, would be a push towards having an equal value tied to, again, the other categories are very important, retention and completion. But we believe the other categories to be just important as well, and that is entry-level wages for our graduates, as well as job placement. And look, we don't want to be a college that is given high performance because we place graduates in low-paying jobs.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. We want to place our graduates in high-paying jobs, and we believe that that's tremendously valuable. We don't want to reallocate resources from the work that we're doing to get our graduates jobs when we realize in the performance funding metrics that it's actually valued less than some of the other categories.
Okay, hold on, Madam Chair.
This is the last follow-up.
Okay.
We have to move on.
I can speak to Mr. Hale offline. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Rogers. Thank you again, Mr. Hale.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we have Dr. George Hansberry, Nova Southeastern University President and CEO, Dr. Fred Lippman, Chancellor, Health Professions Division, Nova Southeastern University. Thank you.
Thank you, Representatives. Thank you for allowing me to say a few words. First of all, thank you as President of NSU for what you have done for us in the past and hopefully what you will do to support us in the future. We are now Broward County's largest private employer. As a private not-for-profit university, we employ close to 5,000 individuals. And as such, we are a $2.6 billion economic impact in the state of Florida. What I come to you today for is to continue to support our efforts in providing education to students from the state of Florida. Even though we're a private not-for-profit university for more than 30 years, we have provided an offset for in-state students versus out-of-state students. And the legislature has supported us for more than 30 years to allow us to offset for those students in major programs such as medicine, optometry, and pharmacy. We'd like to see dentistry as well. But the highest point was right around $7.3 million coming to the university from the state of Florida. And that was right before the Great Recession in 2007-2008. This year, as everyone has experienced the cuts, we have survived with you, and each year since 2007-2008, that offset has been reduced. So that this year, we have requested $4.5 million, and we received from the legislature $4.3 million. Unfortunately, the governor saw fit to veto that, and we had to increase right in the middle of the summer, right before this fall, the tuition offset for the in-state students. I did meet with the governor and tell him that next year, because of this increase in the cut, he would see that we had an increase in tuition. And his logic of reducing completely the amount was because of tuition. So don't be allowing us to get caught in the catch-22. So I wanted to come and thank you because of the 26,000 students, 80% are from Florida. And of that 80%, 50% come from the Tri-County area, with our greatest percentage coming from Broward County. We're a minority-majority university of 30% Black or African-American, 30% Hispanic or Latino, 30% Caucasian, and 10% Asian. So a true minority-majority university, which I think if you look at some of the state university systems, we are the greatest.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Hansberry.
Thank you.
Chancellor, you're not going to say anything? All right. Does anyone have a question for the president? Seeing none?
Yeah.
You have a question, Representative Bowles?
Just going from the setup. Thank you, Madam Chair. So unclear, what I'm getting from you is primarily your request from us is funding.
Correct. And we will be asking for $7.5 million in next year's budget to restore it back to the 2007-2008 and to expand so that our dental students, which are about 60% in state, to receive that same support that the medical, optometry, and pharmaceutical students have. I also thank you for the FRAG for the 20%, which is right around 3,000 in-state students who receive, who are undergraduates, receive the Florida Resident Access Grant. Thank you for that on their behalf.
Thank you. Any more questions? Chancellor?
Thank you, members. In essence, we're really not asking for money for North Southeastern University. We're asking for money to capitate Florida residents who are in the health professions division, which we have been receiving now for over 30 years. And why do we ask for that? Because when you go back to the days when we had Board of Regents, or whether we had a Veterans Commission, or now we have a Board of Governors, each one of those groups have stated that the best buy in the state of Florida educationally, with all due respect for our sister schools, was the dollars invested in producing healthcare professionals that are retained in the state of Florida. One of the things that we should recognize is, for example, in our medical school, nearly 50%, that goes between 49 and 52% of our graduates stay in the state of Florida. If you measure some of our sister schools, they're anywhere between 21 and 28%. That's a very significant issue. And the reason it's very significant is because, again, and to underscore what the President said, we're the majority minority university. One of our issues is to make sure that our students rotate in what we call rural and underserved areas. And as you all know, it's very difficult to find doctors and pharmacists and dentists and optometrists in areas where you have to travel 90 or 100 miles to get their service. So I just want to remind you again that we're not asking for NSU, we're asking for students that matriculate in NSU that give back to the state of Florida. The other thing I would like to tell you very candidly is that we have always had the privilege of having bipartisan support on this issue. As you all know, the House and the Senate both agreed in conference as to $4.38 million, but it was vetoed. I think it's imperative for you to recognize that this is not only a Broward County issue, but not a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. It's a state of Florida issue, and I thank you for your support.
Thank you very much, Chancellor. Are there any questions for the Chancellor?
Just for clarification, thanks. I heard previously the mention of the salaries that our graduates would be salary level. Can you tell me when we have our students going to the rural areas, how are they compensated? Do you know?
Exceptionally well, because what it is our founder, Dr. Morton Jerry, at the time of the medical school, felt it was very, very important that people should recognize that you can't always serve in an area with a big tertiary care hospital. That if somebody is to be seen, that you have to use your talent and your knowledge. I will tell you very candidly, Representative, that one of the great prides that I have, and I know the President has, and our chairman will always expect to make graduation. So when we see the people all across the stage, I would bet to you that 99.8% of them are all going to a job that next day. And the salaries are very, very high. We probably have a salary impact in this state of Florida and really in the southeastern United States that is one of the highest in the entire country, if not in the entire Western world.
We are producing not only the four productions that were mentioned here, but we have now been getting ready to be involved with an MD school as well as the Isabel Medical School. We have 8 colleges and 28 professions. So when you talk about nurse professionals, then we have a dramatic shortage. You talk about PhD nurses that need to be created to educate nurses. We're doing that. We put our money where our mouth should be in order to answer your question. And I can tell you that we are producing people who are well sought after and well compensated.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I just follow up with one question?
One question, Representative Rogers.
Medical residency program. Tell me, how does that work considering we have the shortages in every level? Where are we with those numbers?
Well, most people don't recognize the difference between clinical rotations and medical residencies. Clinical rotations for doctors, for dentists, for pharmacists, are really provided by venues that are, with the exception of dentistry, external law bricks and mortar.
Right.
But residencies are funded by the federal government or by hospitals that wish to invest in residences. The biggest problem that we have is nothing to do with the state of Florida going into residencies. It's the federal government that put a cap on residencies in the 1997 budget reconciliation. And we fight the fight all the time. However, our relationship is very, very firm with many of the hospital corporations and the public hospitals in the state of Florida. And I'm very proud to tell you that we have over 1,200 residencies filled in the state of Florida and nearly 2,800 clinical rotations in the state of Florida. Now, the diaspora of hospitals throughout the state, particularly in Broward County, Broward Health has always been our partner, has been our education partner since 1990.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Any other rep? All right. Thank you very much, Chancellor, for your presentation and answering our questions. Next, we will have Ryan Britton from Florida Atlantic University.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the delegation, non-guests. My name is Ryan Britton. I'm the Director of State Affairs for Florida Atlantic University. Thanks for allowing me a few minutes to speak about how FAU is pursuing with unbridled ambition its goal of becoming the fastest improving public research university in the country. As FAU enters its 51st year of service, I'm happy to report the outlook is excellent for our institution. FAU is among the top performing state university system institutions this year and received more than $11.3 million of performance funding. Compared to the $7 million that was held from our budget, was withheld from our budget in 2014, there's evidence of a significant turnaround. Yep. Our new strategic plan and student success initiatives are beginning to pay dividends. We're very proud of that. As you know, this spring, FAU joined with Max Planck and Scripps Research in announcing a new major collaboration. Our STEM Life Sciences initiative is creating a one-of-a-kind honors education experience that allows students to work, study, and conduct research along some of the world's leading scientists. We are incredibly grateful for the state's investment this year, over $3.5 million, and we're looking forward to continue that investment in the years to come. In addition, our College of Medicine, which trains physicians in Broward and Long Beach counties, recently received full accreditation from the LCMA, and it celebrated the graduation of our first full class of MDs. All 54 graduates received residency matches, and they are being placed in residency programs throughout the state and the country, including our home, which was started in 2014 with the help of state funding. FAU is also committed to the expansion of entrepreneurship in the economy and in academia. FAU's Tech Runway program combines the resources of the university and the local business community. Although the funding for Tech Runway was vetoed this year by the governor, we are committed to the program and will continue to support it and continue to seek funding in the future. In addition, there's a number of good things happening throughout our service area. Our Propel program continues to transform K-12 school leadership. The Propel partnership between FAU and Broward College is now entering its fourth year and has become a completely self-sustaining program. Our Center for Environmental Studies recently relocated its headquarters to our Davie campus. And in February 2016, the center will host their third National Sea Level Rise Summit. Rep. Jacobs has been very involved. The summit will be titled Connected Futures from Alaska to Florida. And I'll last say that our CTEC campus just celebrated its 15-year anniversary to Dayton Beach. So our long-standing relationship with Broward is alive and well. I'm grateful for your support.
Thank you very much, Ryan, for your presentation. Are there any questions for Mr. Britton?
One question. Are you asking us for anything? You gave us a raven report.
Ask for continued support for tech money and the tech appropriation budget and our STEM life sciences initiative and the tech appropriation budget.
Just wanted to know.
We're opposed to support of the University of Miami on Friday.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you also for allowing me to participate, although I couldn't attend the white coat ceremony. It gave me great pleasure to support that that program. Thank you.
It's been a very good year.
Okay.
You're welcome.
All right. Next, we will hear from Marcus Burgess, Florida Memorial University.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairwoman and fellow members. On behalf of Dr. Rosalind Artis, President of Florida Memorial University, and Chairman Charles Joy, thank you for this opportunity. We actually thank you for the support that you guys have funded us in the past. Without you, we couldn't do the work we do to educate the students of both Broward, Miami-Dade, and the state of Florida, and the international students as well. Just some brief highlights. Our probably flagship program that you guys helped to fund was our Black Male Explorers program. In its 14th year, we currently have 65 young men, and we've actually produced over 500 to date, with a 100% college graduation rate. 100% of our students go to college and they actually finish, and 50% of them attend Florida Memorial University, or have attended. Our summer bridge program is in the second year. Now, the importance of this program is simply this. Many of our students, as you know, who leave our high schools, are still ill-prepared when they come to college. But isn't a college supposed to be everyone's dream or at least an opportunity to go? So what we do is we rank these students who may not have the high SAT scores or high GPAs, who still want that chance at college education, bring them in for 2 weeks prior to, and we give them rigorous training in math and science. And to that, 85% actually tested in college math, and we have a 92% retention rate. It's good to hear our community talk about the fact that we can give up on their children. 42% of the students at Florida Memorial University actually are from Broward County. We are thankful for the technology and infrastructure that we were able to be funded. We have enhanced library collections, particularly at electronic databases, expanded Wi-Fi access, expanded online programming, and improving technology infrastructure in the conference center to support academic lectures and conferences. And in our career services area, we're getting students prepared to go into the job market on that freshman year. We're increasing internship opportunities, and we currently have the highest job placement rate of nearly any institution in the state of Florida. 60% of our students who graduate end up with a job. So I think you should be committed for the work we do with not having the same funding as other institutions. In short, FAU students work and contribute to the South Florida economy. We hope that you will continue to support our initiatives, and we thank you for your young members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burgess, for your presentation. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Ask your question.
Okay.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you. All right. Can you be specific as to what you would like for the legislatures to do for Florida Memorial this year?
We want you to increase the funding for our Summer Bridge program because we think it's crucial that students are able to stay in college if they are prepared once they get to college. We cannot change the K-12 education that students are receiving. However, we can help give them better care. And we would love to have continued funding for technology, this infrastructure. We're near the airport, so if we are limited to how high we can do some broadband space. So we need continued funding so we can get more Wi-Fi accessibility on campus. And we would love for you to continue to support the Black Belt Sport Program. I think it's wonderful that we can educate these young men on being good students. And it's not just about tying the tie and being, say yes and no. These kids actually get funded in, or get trained in STEM areas. They are Microsoft certified by the time they finish this program. So we are doing great things other than teaching them.
Okay, one question about your aviation program. How is that going?
The aviation program is wonderful, and we're actually literally going into the drone area for aviation because we have to be able to cut it in. We understand our sister schools at community colleges are doing it, but we want to actually, from the college for the liberal arts side, and also add as part of STEM area of aviation. We've been leading the folks in Washington as in how we can take our drone technology, maybe. Let's think about this way. If a major hurricane came through to survey the land, you use it for a helicopter in the air. How much money does it cost to get to you? But imagine drones surveying the land.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your presentation. Any more questions? You have a question, Representative Bowles?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you expand a little bit for me? I heard your presentation. You spoke about Wi-Fi and accessibility, and you mentioned two or three times, but you said something about being near the airport.
Well, being near the airport, we are restricted on how high you can go with what's wireless access because of the airspace. So anything closer to the airport usually is not as strong Wi-Fi technology-wise as it is in other parts of the campus. So we're trying to come up with creative ways with our infrastructure to actually be able to give not only students in the dorms who are actually right on that line, as well as the, reference to conference center, to be able to have a strong signal for guests who attend the campus and not having. Now, of course, if you have Ethernet plugged in, fine. But for guests and lecturers and whatnot, the Wi-Fi space should signal is not as strong in that area of the campus because of our proximity here.
So, follow up. Your request from us is more funding for Wi-Fi?
More funding too. There are a lot of cutting edge on things that are coming to the board today that cost money to strengthen the Wi-Fi signals.
Okay,
thank
you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Burgess, for being here and giving your presentation. At this time, we'll have Dave Wallace from United Way of Broward County.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Madam Chair, I'd like to send the afternoon more women in charge.
Thank you.
Once again, I'm here, fourth year in a row, really, to talk about expanding access to quality early learning. And sadly, over every year, it seems that early learning in the state of Florida has been a casualty of other things going on in Tallahassee. Last year, the United Way of Florida released the Alice Report that really was showing a light on the struggles that working families have across the state of Florida. And we know that affordable child care is essential for Alice parents to maintain their employment and become financially self-sufficient. But the high cost of quality early learning is prohibitive for many families. Sometimes it's more than their rent. And it forces parents to make choices for other providers that may offer standards that are questionable, even when it comes to health and safety standards. Right now we have 2,225 children of Florida low-income working families that are in school readiness programs across the state. But thousands more are eligible, but don't get these services due to insufficient resources and inadequate or non-existent statewide standards. Right now we have over 66,000 children on wait lists for these programs. And right now when we talk about quality standards as part of the licensure, Florida ranks 40th national for the for early learning provider licensing program standards when it comes to quality. These programs right now are eligible for state funding, but are not required to meet minimum health and safety standards. To ensure all children are receiving critical developmental opportunities, all providers receiving state funding should be required to meet consistent industry standards, such as student-teacher ratio, higher teacher qualifications, measured teacher-child interactions, developmentally appropriate curricula, and parental engagement. So United Way of Broward County has three asks, and actually it's not just United Way of Broward County, but all of them to United Ways across the state of Florida. The first is that we increase funding for school readiness by $30 million to clear wait lists by 10%. The second is to restore funding for Florida's BPK program to a minimum pre-recession 2000 levels of $2,677. And finally, link all school readiness funding to required industry standard benchmarks to better prepare our children for school success and ensure accountability of all public funds.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wallace. And for those of you who do not know, you know this early learning has been my passion in Tallahassee. And every year I'm asking for more money for early learning because we understand that if we give the children what they need at the beginning, they won't end up in prisons and by grade three being not responsive. Are there any other questions? Yes, Mr. Representative Bose.
Madam Chair, in your presentation you spoke, your third ask was linking funding to benchmarks.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, there's a section there on implementing consistent industry standards. If you look at all the accreditation bodies, you can find some commonality in what those industry quality benchmarks would be. So that would be, they have to have us specific student-to-teacher ratio, they have to have developmentally appropriate curriculum, parental engagement, there has to be measured teacher-child interaction. So there are standards that could be put in place that right now we don't have as mandatory in order to receive state funding.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask a question, sir.
Excuse me. Could you hold up on that, please?
Pardon?
Can you just wait on that? Hold up on that, please? Thank you. If I let you ask a question, I've got to let everybody else in the audience ask a question. And on time constraints, right? If you could speak with him or your representative about your question about early childhood learning, it would be very well to listen to you, okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Wallace. We'll now hear from Sheila Van House from the Broward County School, Public Schools.
Good evening. My name is Sheila Van House, Director of Legislative Affairs for Broward County Public Schools. The nation's sixth largest school district, serving over 265,000 students, over 30,000 employees district-wide. So it's a great honor to represent them. We have spent the last couple weeks trying to nail down our legislative program. It's coming before our board in the coming days. But what I can tell you is we have three main legislative priorities. The first is around education funding. Our main focus is around the underestimated student populations in the budget process. So Broward County Public Schools in the last 3 years has lost $20 million. So when we hear from Tallahassee that we'll receive a $50 or $100 increase per pupil, once the school year starts and we have an increase in student population, sometimes that's $50 or $100 less per pupil. So that's one issue. Our second issue is around student achievement, with a focus on the Florida Standards Assessment. And so what we're asking for is kind of the same dialogue we had last year, a continual delay of using the Florida Standards Assessment in determining student progression, student graduation rates, teacher evaluation, district grades, until the 2017-18 or 2016-17 school year. We're also asking for the DOE to review similarities between the FSA and other national benchmark tests. What you aren't going to see this year from Broward County Public Schools is a stance that's similar to other school districts asking for AP, IP, or SAT scores to count as the FSA. We're not taking that stance just yet until we know the results of the FSA. Our third and final request, or ask to the legislatures in the around charter school reform, mainly we're looking to close the loopholes in Florida statute that bad charter operators have continuously exploited year after year hurting our students. And so that is our issue when it comes to charter schools. So we're focusing on the application process, the authorization process, to tighten up some of those loopholes, and we're hoping to work with the charter community moving that forward. So other than that, I want to thank you all for your continuous support of our students. It has been an absolute honor and privilege to work with each of you. We do have a joint delegation school board meeting coming up on October 14th, so we'll have a final program that we can talk in.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? I wanted to just to give you an opportunity to speak. Would you please sign up and we'll put you on the list if there's something that you want us to know about early learning. All right? Just sign up and we'll listen. At this time, I'd like Marlene Lee, president of Friends of Broward County Library. Yes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and representatives. My name is Marlene Lee. I'm president of the Friends of Broward County Library Educator. We're the library's principal advocacy. I'm here today to thank you for the support you have in the past given to libraries, specifically to Broward County Library, and ask that you continue to actively support us in the future. We are vocal and concerned group of over 1,000 members, all of whom live or work in Broward County. We meet monthly and discuss ways we may better support our libraries. Our advocacy team travels to Tallahassee each year to speak to you or your aides about the importance of libraries and the issues facing us in the coming year. We also appear at commission meetings when any issues relating to library spending is on the agenda. Essentially, I guess, we are an army of unpaid volunteer lobbyists, you can say it, who love libraries. Why do we do this? Because of our understanding of what libraries bring to this community and the pride that we have in them. If I say to you, what is the first thing that comes to mind when I say library? Of course, books would be your answer. But of course, it happened. But now they come not only in hardback and paperback, but in audio, video, and downloadable formats. And let's look at our programs. Programming at the library used to be story hours for kids and a few adult book talks. But now we have reinvented ourselves and offer hundreds of programs a week. From computer training to resume writing and interview skills to coding classes and 3D printing instruction. These are significant accomplishments. But we won't stop and rest on our laurels, one of which just recently was the Florida Library Association's award to us for the 2015 Libraries of the Year. We're very proud of that. This was given to us for our outstanding accomplishments and close attention that we have paid to the exponential growth and change in the information world and the technology that is inherent with that change. The upcoming year brings with it even more advances. These advances and their successors are the items that will require your attention and funding in the upcoming years. Just recently, I checked our 2014 end-of-the-year statistics, which I thought may be of interest to you. As you know, we have 38 libraries, public libraries here in Broward County, and over 8 million visits a year to these libraries. Almost 9 million people have used our website. 2 million people used our computers, and 34,000 took our computer classes. Over a million people have Broward County Library cards. And these people have checked out almost 10 million materials in the last year. I think these are important to you, they're important to us, and when you have a chance to vote on library funding, please answer A or yes, whatever you say.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lee. Any questions for the library? Yes. Come back.
First of all, just to thank you for all the work you do. Just out of odd happenstance, I'm curious about the friend. I know you're from Friends of the Broward County Library, but I also know there's been an expansion and a movement to have the individual libraries have Friends of, and I'm going to give one in particular because after I leave here at 6:30 tonight, I'm installing the new board at the Friends of the Sterling Road Library and joining their board simultaneously. But how is that expansion going amongst the individual libraries of Friends of the Broward County Library System, and then that offshoot of Friends of, and then the individual libraries?
Yes, we have a few, not too many, but very few individual, they're public libraries here in Broward County, Oakland Park, Parkland. They all are in the library groups as well. And they all are covered by a company from Tallahassee. Last year we had, I think we got an increase of 5.5 million, and we had split it between 66 libraries. Though every Friends group is out there lobbying for their own libraries, I'm sure. And we've always been very cognizant of the interaction between our individual private libraries, because those folks, they're paying public library funds. They pay their city taxes, they pay their county taxes. County taxes fund our libraries, but those folks are double taxed. They're getting Wilton Manor's taxes, and they're getting Broward County taxes that they have to pay. So we are always willing to share anything that we have with them as far as our library is concerned.
But they're doing well, and there's no conflict of interest. Perfect. No. I just wanted to make sure, because it seems like such a great idea to get some of these individual libraries.
And they're always invited to any of anything that we have. I mean, we're very willing to let them take part in what we are able to provide, because we are so much bigger. 38 libraries is a lot, one of the very largest library systems in the country. And they have always done very well. They've always won a lot of awards, and we hope to continue.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any more questions or comments by the reps? All right. Let's move right along. We'll hear from Jody Snowden, dyslexia legislation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I apologize for spelling out on the subject line, but hopefully after this you'll forgive me. I am a person with dyslexia, and I'm here today to tell you why I have a disability and our state. I'm a bit afraid of public speaking.
Take your time.
Dyslexia is a neurological language-based disability. Even though I can read, I still struggle with pronunciations and word retrieval, especially when I'm nervous. Dyslexia affects 1 in 5 people, many unknowingly, because people with dyslexia often compensate for their lack of reading skills. Usually they're unsuccessful, which comes at a heavy burden. And it comes at a great cost to society, as evidenced by a high level of prison inmates with reading disabilities. I'm not illiterate. I didn't just memorize that statement like many of our children with learning disabilities do to hide their shame. I was able to read because the stars were aligned when I was young. I was given appropriate interventions and accommodations by the end of first grade. For the record, not all dyslexics flip their letters. I didn't. You can't even imagine how many kids don't get tested based on that. I'm not stupid. My phonological weakness occurs in spite of my intelligence. Dyslexia affects students' ability to read, write, and sometimes speak, which makes them appear unintelligent. Other times, their intelligence helps them to mask their problems. It is often parents who realize their child is not reaching their potential at school, but they are faced with a lot of misinformation and misconceptions about learning disabilities from well-intentioned but misguided schools. I'm a college graduate. I graduated magna cum laude with a bachelor's degree in teaching children with varying exceptionalities. I made it through the Florida education system and earned a college degree. Not many students with specific learning disabilities do that in Broward. Not because I'm any smarter than the others, but because I got lucky early in my education. In 2014, only 11% of students in Florida with specific learning disabilities were able to read with grade level proficiency. In Broward, that number was 12%. Those percentages have nothing to do with the reading potential of those students, that have everything to do with the lack of knowledge about learning disabilities that plague legislators and educators in this state. It is ignorance that exists in spite of our state's rich resources on learning disabilities, including the Florida Learning Disabilities Research Center, one of only 4 centers in the United States funded by the National Institute of Health. You can just give me 30 more seconds.
Go right ahead.
Okay. We must act now. The average fifth grader reads 1 million words per year. The average child with reading issues only reads 50,000. My six-year-old son, who is a very smart boy with a learning disability, which was passed on by me, asked me today when I told him who I was speaking to, if not teaching a child is against the law, if not teaching a child to read is against the law, and I didn't have a clear answer for him. It is certainly a civil rights issue. Please support any legislation brought forth by Janet Atkins and any other legislator trying to raise awareness and funding for learning disability. Let's make it truly against the law in Florida to not teach a child to read.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the presenter?
Just one question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a specific bill that you know of that's been filed by Rep. Atkins?
Not at the moment. Okay. But she is trying to raise awareness and get one before.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. At this time, we'll hear from Kelly Thomerson.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Just really quick in answer to her response to her question about dyslexia legislation. There's not a bill that's formulated right now, but there is a dyslexia summit that's taking place on Thursday in Jacksonville. That a lot of really important people are getting together to talk about this very issue, but without funding for it, it's really just going to be another burden on teachers. So I'm a friend of Jody's, and I implore you to make every effort to support legislation that ensures teachers and reading coaches are trained to identify indicators for specific learning disabilities such as dyslexia and auditory processing disorder, and more importantly, to adequately fund RTI so that evidence-based interventions can be implemented with fidelity. Despite having a bachelor's degree in early childhood education from Florida State University, and despite having completed graduate-level coursework that focused on reading and language arts, and despite teaching kindergarten and first grade students for 8 years how to read, I was unable to teach my own son how to read. We have books in every room in our home. We had the policy of back books to bed every night from the time he was a baby. He loves hearing books, read a lot of them, always has. We have pictures of him sitting on every parent and grandparent's lap reading books, and we have videos of him reading his own versions of books when he was two by memory. But as soon as I started calling his attention to print, he avoided reading. And he had a lot of other classic signs of just his speech intelligibility suffered. So when he would talk to people, they'd ask me to repeat what he said. He wound up qualifying for an IEP in Broward when he was 3.5 years old because his overall intelligibility suffered. But the developmental, the sounds that were out of place were developmentally appropriate. So had I not used the word advocate, he may not have received those services. So when he entered kindergarten, I fully expected that my bright boy would be reading because, you know, I'm a teacher and I see the reading magic happen. It didn't happen for him, and some of the warning signs were ignored because he was an incredibly smart boy. So we talked about retention in first grade. We talked about what, you know, he just needs more time. He's a boy. Well, I wound up getting a private neuropsychological evaluation to determine what the difference was. Does he have auditory processing disorder like his occupational therapist thinks? Does he have dyslexia? Does he have ADHD? So I went through great lengths to make sure that I figured all this out. Most parents will go to the pediatrician who you're going to trust, okay, their ADHD, fill out a checklist. That's not enough. I didn't want to take that as enough to give my child medicine unless it was for sure. So we pursued further testing to find out that no, dyslexia and auditory processing disorder mimic the symptoms and often are comorbid with. So as a teacher, as an educator, I look at my son and I think about the students that I miss in my own classroom and the students that if I had the right approach, they would have been successful. And that approach is an explicit multi-sensory approach to reading. These students, my son should be outperforming 70% of the students in his class, and because he didn't have the right medicine, he can give it a different, he can differentiate instruction like all these wonderful educators have done for him. But just like medicine, if you give it in a pill form or a liquid form or an injectable, the same medicine isn't gonna work. Mm-hmm. They need a specific approach, and up to 30% of our students need it. So My message is also to fund legislation, fund and support the things that are going to support these students so they don't slip through the cracks any longer.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Next, we'll have Thomas Stravino, Broward Education Foundation.
Hello, I'm Thomas Stravino from Broward Education Foundation. I'm here to say thank you on behalf of the Board of Consortium of Education Foundations for your support for the matching grants. This year, our funding request is at $6 million. These are the challenging grants that you all provide to us. The return on your investment is in the blue and orange handout that we've left for you. Since 2006, this program has impacted 12 million students. 3.5 million of them are low performing. The state of Florida has invested $61 million in the students of the public schools that are studied by the Education Foundations. I just want you to know that you help us make donating partners from community members. When I can say to an individual or a corporation, I can match your investment in our teachers and our students, we can impact even more of the children in our Broward County public schools. Last year, Broward Education Foundation provided incentive grants that affected 20,000 students in our teacher innovative teaching program, and we've also served 64,000 students in our district with educational tools, free educational tools for their success. I also left you two invitations. One is the October 21st Hall of Fame breakfast. We have new inductees. We have one inductee, Representative Du Bois right here, and it's always good to have another class of alumni who are outstanding in the Broward County Public Schools. The last thing I want to give you is an invitation to an event that will raise awareness and resources for more than 2,300 homeless students that we have in our Broward County Public Schools. It's the Forever Home event. It's on September 15th. It is at the EMR. The event is free. And you can read the story of Samara. Samara is 8. She lives in a car. She needs our help. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Rep. DeBose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, two questions. One, you said September 15th.
I'm sorry, it's September the 18th.
Okay.
The 18th?
I'm a little nervous.
Okay. Oh, don't be.
Potentially may be able to make that one. Unfortunately, I would love to attend the Hall of Fame event, being in the inaugural class, but we have a special session. So I'll be there in spirit.
Thank you, Representative. We appreciate that. Forever Home is Friday, September the 18th.
Yes, and we'll be up, and some of us will be in committee week. That is committee week, and some of us will be there for a Friday committee. I know I will. But thank you very much for coming, and we look forward to doing for you what we can. I'm very much interested in the homeless students because I do know that being on the board of a homeless shelter, what they are facing. So we do really need to step up our game here in Broward when it comes to the homeless students. Yes.
Happy to help out for students who have nobody to help them.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay. Norden Weinberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Norden Weinberger, and I'm also here to talk on the topic of dyslexia. I'm 53 years old. I was raised in Bethesda, Maryland, and I am dyslexic. I have three children who have all been raised here in Florida. All three of my children were born dyslexic. Dyslexia took over, when I first found out that my first daughter was dyslexic, I crawled up into bed for 3 days because I knew what she was going to go through and how hard and difficult it was going to be for her. But I also knew that I was going to overcome it and that I would do everything in my power to make sure that she could too. Like Jody told you, I got my children also tested at $2,000 per student. Then they have to be retested again to get into college with accommodations. Accommodations being primarily for them is extra time, also books on tape. So on top of that, they were tutored twice a week for 3 years. The tutor that I was lucky enough to find was $48 an hour. She's currently retired. And the closest tutor I can personally find is in West Palm Beach, and she is $100 an hour. Now, most people obviously can't afford that. But I think if we look at the large numbers of our children, 1 in 5 being dyslexic, it is going to be an expense to address, no doubt about it, and it is going to take time. But if we can take those children and teach them how to read and phonetically break down the words, because they can't do it on their own, the left side of the brain does not work. 3 parts of the brain work for reading. In a dyslexic child, only the left side works. So we need to really take a look at these bills that are coming out. Last year, we had 2 bills that were presented by Gail Hayward.
Harrell.
Harrell.
They did have support in the Senate and in the House, but it didn't go anywhere. I'd just like to go over real quickly 11 facts about dyslexia. And the sources for this is the PBS facts about dyslexia, the Dyslexia Center of Utah, A to Z Mind Learning Center, and the first one is dyslexia is the most common learning dyslexia is the most common learning disability. Individuals with medical conditions have difficulty in the area of language processing. 1 in 5 suffer from dyslexia. About 70 to 80% of children who are placed in social special education and learning disabilities are dyslexic. You'll also find that in our prisons, the majority of them are dyslexic, also in our juvenile detention centers. So I think it's going to take time and money, but I think in the end, it'll save us money.
Thank you very much. Any questions for her? Tom Hines, is it? Tom Hines, okay.
Members, my name is Tom Hines. I lived in Broward County in Weston. I was chief pilot and captain for American Airlines, and for the last 13 seasons, I've flown my Dolphins to their away games. And I'm a proud alum of Florida State University, and I currently serve as chairman of the Florida State University Alumnus National Board Director. Our goal is to make FSU a top 25 public university. And during the last legislative session, you all helped make us take a giant step in that direction. The legislature included an additional $5 million to the already existing $20 million pre-immunis package for Florida State, and an additional $17 million was added in performance funds tied to a separate set of Board of Governors matrix. I want to thank you for that. Your support for pre-immunis funding will help ensure our university reaches that top 25 status within the next several years. The increases in state funding have allowed us to hire 57 new professors. The pre-immunis dollars have also allowed us to employ 8 entrepreneurs and residents to teach our students how to turn their ideas and innovations into practical enterprises. This fall, one of our most academically accomplished freshman classes in Florida State history began his college career. These 6,200 freshmen entered FSU with an average GPA of 4.0. An average SAT score of 1858. Even more remarkable is that nearly a third are first time in their family to attend college, and nearly the same percentage qualifies for federal financial aid. Florida State University's economic impact on our state totals more than $8 billion, which includes the earnings of more than 190,000 FSU graduates working in our state and 14,000 FSU graduates that work here in Broward County. Finally, according to a recent survey that my alumni association conducted, our graduates consider the national ranking of their degree the most important thing. I thought it was the national ranking of the football team, but what about So that is the most important objective, and that is why it's very important for us to try to raise Florida State to the top 25. I respectfully ask that you continue to help us to achieve this objective by sustaining the strong university system that has driven and will continue to drive the economy of our great state. And thank you for the preeminence funding, and go Noles.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hines. Any questions? Comments? Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to make a comment, has a presentation, because we've reached our final presenter, and I'm opening it up to the floor. If there's anyone who has anything to say that they wished for us to know. If not, I will move for adjournment. Yes, I will. Our next public hearing will be on Thursday, and that public hearing will be taking place at the MPO. Anyone having transportation, growth management, economic development, environment, those are the issues that we will be having heard at that hearing. So if you have any issues on those areas, please sign up to speak at the hearing. It will be from 4 to 6 p.m., and that's at the Broward MPO building, located what's the address of the MPO building? Okay, there are schedules outside on the table. Please take them, because we are going to be having other hearings, and you can sign up to speak at those hearings if it's an issue that affects you or you want us to know about. Thank you very much for coming. Looking forward to working with all of you on all of your issues, and hoping that we can resolve as many as possible. Thank you. Meeting adjourned. That's it.